Dieter and Jake, right on time. Tuesday. And we're breaking down the film from 49ers and Cardinals, trying to swing this thing forward a little bit as well. Jake, first big takeaway watching the All-22 week three.
Bryce Huff's going to have to save this team. And based on how he's played, it's not completely out of the question. He's been amazing. And yeah, the run game, where I expected him to be terrible, he's been good. Like, objectively, not like cutesy good. Like, oh, for a guy who's bad, he's been good. Like, he's been right. Good.
What so is that? Like, what can you expound on that a little bit? Like, I'm seeing it, but what does that mean when you really break it down?
I think I might have to go back and watch him previously. I think early in his career, he's just asked to fly off the edge and sort of didn't have a clue. Mm-hmm. And then Fangio just like hated him last year so much.
He stood him up. And I get it. You see his body and you're like, I don't want that guy on the edge. But there are some guys who defy the prototype, right?
And yeah, it's something where it's like he's like Mykal Williams is like closing down the edge. Like he's congesting space. He's collapsing the edge. He's not doing that, but like I saw a play where I think Benson wanted to maybe bounce it outside. Huff held his guy, shut down that lane, and then jumped back inside to make the stop. And I was like, that's really impressive, and he wasn't losing ground. So that's going to be crucial because he's the only true pass rusher that they have right now. Right. And as much as we like Mykal and some of the other guys, like no one has the arsenal that he has, not even close.
No. And it will be really interesting to see now moving forward how they utilize those other defensive ends, because Huff has to be a guy who's on the field, I mean, conservatively 75% of the time. I know they've been trying to limit it,
but yeah, it's got to be like 2/3 of the time, I think.
That's a lot. Can I throw a number at you with Mykal? I went through and ran this out. And the Cardinals, not the easiest team to do this with because of all of Kyler's scrambles, many of which had no pressure at all. But the Cardinals had 35 designed runs when Mykal was on the field. Or I'm sorry, 14 designed runs when Mykal was on the field. They got 35 yards out of those. I mean, it's unbelievable. And the off is damning. They ran it right down their throat when Mykal was off the field. Yep. And we talked about this yesterday in our mini pod when Bosa went out. This is not new. It's not a groundbreaking take. We're not pushing the Overton window here. Like, everyone has to step up now that one of your star players is gone. That would be the case if you had a super team. That would be the case if you have a team like the Niners have, which is a lot of stars and then a lot of scrubs. But on a defensive line that was really impressive the first 3 weeks, and I think exceeded at least our expectations on what they could be, it really does throw a lot of things into question. And we can use those first 3 weeks and say like, oh no, they can handle this. But like, we just simply have not seen them in a serious manner without Nick Bosa. And just quickly, Bosa had 14 snaps against the Cardinals. Okay. Yeah. The Niners had 12 pressures in that game. Only 7 of them came after Bosa was off the field.
I had more pressures than that, but yeah. With Bosa on the field, it was he alone, I think. I had him down for 4 pressures.
Shout out to Kevin Wood joining the channel. Happy to have you as an official sicko. Again, there's a lot to really like with this defensive line. What it looks like now without Nick Bosa is just a huge question mark, and I'm with you. I think Bryce Huff has to be the man. We'll talk down the line about what they could do, possible trades. I think it's pretty obvious that they're just going to go with Gibson or Beal.
I would prefer Gibson. I actually liked what he did in camp.
Unquestionably, but they're not elite. You know, these are not guys who are changing the paradigm. These are guys who can give you 5 or 6 snaps to spell a couple of minutes for somebody else. We don't know what it's going to do for the linebacking situation. We don't know what it's going to do for the secondary.
That's the secondary, something I want to talk about briefly.
Totally. Absolutely. I think we're going to be more than brief on this one, because it really does feel like, as much as everybody on the defensive line has to up their game, I think fundamentally this is now going to have to be a defense that is using their secondary as the foundation because their defensive line is not going to be able to get home as often as they could with Bosa.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes, because I think my number one concern from this team right now is the secondary. There were way too many plays that were just busts. Some were up and stout. Some were one of Jason Pinnock or Diamador Lenore just not doing their assignment. There's a lot of like just lack of communication. Like Marquis Siegel's communicating and then no one's listening. Like, right.
And you can see that. I mean, you can see him trying to coordinate, you know, the back end.
Stay over there and then no one stays. And then Bernardo Green is out of sorts because he's chasing a route. He shouldn't be even anywhere near in the realm of having to cover because somebody else blew it. And I think very interested to see, I texted you semi-jokingly, but not really. I think like I've hated a lot of what the Jaguars have done, but this could be like the Brian Thomas Jr. breakout game.
Yeah.
Well, it's not because of how much has been open. Like when they ran cover three, there were acres and acres of space. And one of them was just a Marvin Harrison Jr. drop. And he had a 32-yard catch on the other one.
Yeah, they did a lot of, you know, flood stuff, a lot of double overs, and
that scene was good, man.
It was good. It's a well-coordinated offense, which makes the Kyler thing even more aggravating, and we don't need to get into it. We're moving forward.
Very briefly on that.
Yeah.
Very briefly, the Upton Stout play, because I just graded out Upton Stout.
The famous Upton Stout play, the game-changing Upton Stout play.
The best play of his career. It's tough because Siegel's sort of in his way, and he's chasing in a rough spot to try and get across there. It's a tough situation, but he gets beat, and it should be a clear first down. Mm-hmm. Kyler can either rip it to Michael Wilson, which I get it, it's underneath and Renardo Green's quick and he's chasing and you think maybe he'll chase him down from behind. Okay.
Right.
If he rips it, it's a first down. If he rips it and leads him, it's a first down. He doesn't do that. He understandably goes to Zay Wilson, who's running it across or basically from the slot. And he's got leverage, right? If Kyler leads him and doesn't throw late, which he does both, cause that's what he loves to do. Stout has no chance to make
on the ball. Not a chance.
But instead, he throws late, he throws high, and Stout gets to break it up because it's a beautifully designed play. It's like man coverage, and you've got routes that are really difficult to cover for both guys, and Kyler just doesn't execute.
That's the story of Kyler Murray. It does feel like Pinnock, who I've said now a couple of times, and I wasn't able to put my finger on it in the first two games exactly. It feels like I kept saying he was susceptible, like there was something off. I think this game was the telltale sign that like he's either freelancing or doesn't know what the hell he's doing out there. And if you're a veteran safety who was brought in because the defensive coordinator likes you and thought that you'd be a smart guy, like that's not the way that you should be playing.
Yeah.
Like I get it that it's like, hey, might be my last chance to be a starter. Got to go out there, make something happen. But he is making too much happen, and now stuff is happening to him. Pinnock is a problem at this juncture.
Yeah, it's tough because, again, there's an element to coverages on the back end where sometimes you're like, is that cover four or cover six? I can't tell because somebody screwed up their job, and I don't know what the call was because of that. And so there's some elements where you're like, that actually might have been Lenore's fault. But either way, there is like a lack of trust on who's got who and like actually following through on the call. Like if you look at that DeMercado where he had that drop and it should have been a touchdown.
There were a couple of those in this.
There
game.
Was one Not in the red Mercado, zone,
but a lot of drops from the Cardinals. Yeah.
There's one in the red zone where it was a drop and it probably would have been a touchdown or very close to it in the red zone for the Cardinals. And everybody is playing like I'm pretty sure it's just cover four. And then Upton Stout is chasing a route across the field. And you look at Fred Warner and you look at D Winters and they're both like, dude,
what's going on? Cover the hook. I mean, in that case, cover the flat. And, you know, the Niners game plan was you can have all of the flats you want, Kyler, even though that's the spot you want to throw it to. We're just going to take that because you're not going to beat us because we don't think you're a good enough quarterback to kill us with paper cuts.
They gave him all the space, too, between that like linebacker and in deep zone, like there's plenty of space to exploit.
Well, as I joked on Sunday, I mean, every receiver on the Cardinals is a sacrificial X, just running clear out routes. And there were, you know, four or five times where, in fact, that was space that was needed because it created a big gap between the linebackers and the secondary. And again, Pinnock, I don't really know what he's doing. I just don't know what he's doing out there. It's very strange that the rookie safety who, this is not holding on to Pryor's. Like, I think Siegel's actually, you know, kind of, I think he started with his best game, and then second best game was the second game, and his third best game was the third game. So he's starting to get a little bit exposed here. But it's very strange that I'm watching the secondary film here and saying, I know that the rookie knows what he's supposed to be doing, and they're asking a tremendous amount from him. Meanwhile, the veteran, it does not seem to be on the same page. And it, you know, again, like if it was Stout, you go, okay, he's a rookie. He doesn't know. That's not great, but he doesn't know.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be Jason Pinnock who you're applying the same sort of complaints to. And it makes Malik Mustafa's return kind of all the more necessary. And perhaps even tries to speed up that imminence, right? They don't give him the 3 or 4 weeks to get in. It's like, nope, you're back. You're in. Same way they did it with Robinson.
Yeah, they need Mustafa back, because I think there's something happening where there is the lack of communication all the way. I think that wears down on a secondary where there's a lack of trust and a frustration that builds up if you're not communicating clearly. And I think some of the really ugly plays you get, and some of this is probably going to be more prevalent where defenses tend to look better early in the year, but like coverage is a much more complicated art that takes time to sort of get right and get dialed in. I think with Mustafa back, there's going to be a lot more, because, you know, the thing with Tashaun Gibson was that he was in the system for so long and he like could communicate, right? And so even if his body wasn't there, like he was communicating the thing. And now that's all on Markquis Siegel. Yeah. And it doesn't feel like he's being listened to when he's communicating things. And I think that's a problem, and it could get exposed even against an offense that's been really ugly.
Well, we'll talk about this more on Thursday, but just initial read on the Jaguars is that Trevor Lawrence is just spraying that thing. I mean, it's one thing with Kyler and it's like, oh, you're always a half second late and no, you can't read it. I think Trevor Lawrence can rip it and see it.
I don't think he can see it.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'll have a better opinion on that come Thursday.
Right.
But I can tell you this, having just watched some rudimentary tape over the last couple of weeks, like when that ball comes out of his hands, there's no telling where that sumbitch is going. Just no telling where it's going. He was 20 for 40 in his last game. And it's not as if Liam Cohen's a bad offensive coordinator. I mean, the concepts that they're running, the sequencing, it all seems strong. They just have a quarterback who, and I think their run game is really impressive. They just have a quarterback who, I don't know what's going on. He carries himself with this confidence of being the number one overall pick, and a guy who kind of has done it before. Yeah. And he just doesn't look anything like that when I watch it.
And there's like, and again, it's like the same thing with Kyler too, where you're like awful, awful. Oh, there was a good play, and then his receiver dropped it. Right.
Yeah.
And he's like force feeding Parker Washington because he's like actually willing to make catches over the middle, Lawrence, but then drops it too. And you're like, what is this team?
Well, they're 2-1 coming in, and the Niners,
I don't know how.
Well, they've played some shitty teams. And then they're, you know, the Niners are 3-0, where we can talk about the injuries, but even the execution, like offensive execution has been middling. Defensive execution is statistically strong, but a lot of murkiness on the front, and especially on the back, where you're just like, oh boy, this feels like it's a powder keg. I guess these two teams deserve each other at this point.
it does feel
appropriate.
For the first game without Bosa, this is a very inviting matchup for the Niners. And I think you look at the schedule and like they suddenly kind of need this one. I know that's crazy to say while they're 3-0, but like you got to win this game. Like with the Rams coming up and then the Bucks, Bucks won't have Mike Evans, but the Bucks are a tough out. That's on the road.
Unquestionably.
Like you want to get this. You really want to get this one, because I think the Rams might wreak havoc with Puka and Devontae.
I'm deeply concerned.
That about could
that Rams game for the Niners.
Very like bad game for them.
Now, I guess the good news is that it's Thursday night.
And on the road, which is actually better for the Niners playing the Rams, in my opinion.
A little bit. And then, well, heaven forbid you have to be exposed to the heat of Santa Clara. But it is, you know, Stafford was kind of pulling at his back at the end of last game. So that's something to keep an eye on here this Sunday for them. They're in a really good spot standings wise, and they are totally undetermined, totally ambiguous in every other regard. Now,
that's what Kyle Juszczyk said. Is like, he's like, I don't know what we are.
Well, he doesn't know what he is. So, you know, let's, let's work in and work come out. But, you know, Purdy being back, I think, is big. I do think that the book was pretty out on Mac there. And
yeah, it's also
solid
like
backup, but come on,
it doesn't help having like a PCL injury for a guy who already can't really move.
No, I would go against that. He was going to go full Ben Roethlisberger Parkenbark if he had to play another game, just stand there 2 seconds, get it out. And that probably wouldn't have gone well because again, the best case scenario, if you want to play the Mac Jones should be the starting quarterback game because you're a disingenuous jerk is, and we're all, and listen, no one's doing that this week, so I can appreciate it. Yeah. But if you couldn't give it up, if you still need them, their clicks, and you wanted to play that game, like the best case scenario, if you have that kind of a system quarterback in place is what we saw with Garoppolo. You have the Avengers around him. You have just playmakers on playmakers on playmakers.
Hey, they don't it might have be Jimmy on Thursday.
That would be
I'm something. Just saying, like,
can we get Mac versus Jimmy? I mean, can they just bench Brock for a game just for the bit? It's Thursday night football. We're really, you know, we're committing to the bit here as opposed to actually playing.
They need like I guess there is a theme song for Thursday night, but I'm remembering the Sunday night theme song. And I feel like they need like an objectively like horrible AI slop made one to really sell the fact that it's like, because it's an Amazon game, right? That's a Thursday nighters. To really just like sell what they're about.
Yeah. What else stood out to you on the tape? We've kind of been very macro. Anything micro stand out?
there's a lot. So let's see. Luke Farrell. Not sure what you're doing.
Nope.
This is the moment, bud. This is the moment. You signed a 3-year, almost $16 million deal, and George Kittle's not playing. So when is it going to click? When is it going to click? Because he's been a problem on a lot of their runs. It's been iffy at best.
That's a really nice way of putting it.
Let's go to the O-line. Trent was great. He's figured out how to put in about 65% effort with like 90% of the returns.
Oh, that's just the Dieter Kurtenbach columnist plan.
He's just snatch trapping dudes. And he's like, I don't really want to do a full rep here.
Right.
But it's going great. Like it's going great. Colton McKivitz got destroyed on the first three reps of the game by Josh Sweat.
That's right.
Who's really, really good. And then McKivitz was great. Yeah. He was iffy in the run game, but he was great in the pass game. Okay. Connor Colby, who, you know, we talked about, like, we came in when he was drafted. We thought he would be a run first guy. And then they're like, no, he's actually great at pass protection. And then this last
still
week,
don't get it.
Worked in pass protection, really good in the run game.
Yeah.
That groin thing, I'm sure was a factor. And then lastly, Pooney. Yikes. Yikes, brother.
It's Jover for Pooney, but there's no alternative. Like
he's just clearly not right. And almost every pass game snap, he was like turning sideways to just like try and funnel it as far away from the pocket as he could. And so McKivitz ends up with a few snaps where he's like literally blocking two guys.
Yeah.
Pooney was bad. He was bad. And until he's healthy, I don't know if that changes.
I don't know when you get healthy playing professional football and having.
I hope
Calais
it's like
Campbell.
You get some time to go in an ice box after the Thursday night game.
I mean, it wouldn't shock me at all if he shows up on the injury report tomorrow and Thursday and Friday, and they have to put him on the Yetur Gross-Matos plan.
Yeah, and maybe you say like bad. Drew Moss, you start that Thursday night game. We're going to give Pooney 2 full weeks to just try and get healthy. Yeah. Not a great game to try and start a rookie, but.
Dangerous stuff. I mean, this would be more of the game to do it, but they won't do it. Again, there's not. You've already used Colby as your left guard. Like, that was the one guy that they thought, hey, maybe we can slide him in. And, you know, they were right. I mean, it certainly required a level of dubiousness on that idea, but yeah, they were right. Now, there's no second Connor Colby. There just isn't. And I know that the system really, you know, protects guards, but not enough to make up for a knee injury and not enough for you to take anybody of all the available players on your bench. By the way, they have so many up. I mean, every offensive lineman was up this week, all of those guys available. And they're like, we can't play them unless we really have a gun to our head.
Yeah.
On the Farrell thing real fast. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know, I was on with Larry last night and he asked, like, why is the run game not working? And it's interesting, you know, with talking about the secondary and the lack of communication and how kind of one breakdown creates two and three breakdowns because everything has to be sequential and ordered and there's a plan. Like, we have to follow, everyone has to follow the plan, and the weak link usually explodes the entire play. I mean, you mentioned this in the Saints game. I mean, you're seeing that a lot in the run game. And when you play these 4-0-4 fronts, when you play these, you know, very wide looks from the defensive line, which you've seen in week 1, 2, and 3 now,
yep,
it really pushes the fulcrum of the run game to the tight end, because now he's truly the edge setter in an offensive way. And with Farrell just kind of getting worked again and again and again, I think that's a big reason why they're unable to run the football.
Yeah.
And I think that a regular 4-man front that the Jaguars are going to throw their way, presumably, will really do this team wonders, because it's so obvious that George Kittle's not out there as just a blocker.
It's a few things to me. It's they got to pound the ball on the left side because Pooney can't get to anyone. He can't get to a mark. Brendel's been fine for the most part getting to his marks. McKivitz has been whatever.
Yeah.
But when you run right, you're not getting any displacement because Pooney can't displace anyone. McKivitz has to, like, hold on to a block longer, and Brendel needs to really get out in space. But when the space gets confined and he can't, like, get out and run, he doesn't have the drive. Just, and then, yeah, you're, like, relying on Jake Tondras, who, like, can't block and is trying his best.
Yeah.
And Farrell, who is either not getting his assignment or, like, the alignment of that tight front and the way the Cardinals ran some stuff was making things murky. And so him and Bourne are on different pages. And then, so you get like two free guys, and then you don't have Juwan Jennings, or let's not forget Brandon Ayuk's a damn good blocker. Like, you don't have like elite wide receiver blocking. So you've got, like, in order to make these plays work, you're relying on like Jake Tondras and Luke Farrell and like Kendrick Bourne, who's like, okay, but still like doesn't totally know what his assignment is half the time. Like,
no,
it's not a great recipe.
Symmetry allowed. The Niners are number one in passing yards per game. They better be to win games with their inability to run the ball. I mean, Christian McCaffrey is making 1 yard gains into 5 yard gains, and Brian Robinson is taking 1 yard gains and turning them into 1 yard gains. And maybe we see Jordan James this week. Maybe not. I think it would be a good opportunity for him. And I think that they're done with Robinson. I don't think that one nice run where he didn't know the play changes that paradigm, but yeah, I'm willing to be talked out of that stance.
I mean, I think they will make the switch at some point. I just don't know what the factor will be that pushes them over the edge.
But it's interesting. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about a 3-0 team that can't seem to, they don't seem,
a 3-0 team that's not playing all that well.
That's right. They don't seem buckled up. They don't seem, you know, buckled up. They don't seem like they're all on the same page. It seems as if, I mean, that's a lot of room to get worse, and that's a lot of room to grow as well. And I guess, you know, not having Bosa, inherently you're going to have to change how you go about your business. And maybe Robert was throwing too much on him. Maybe he was making it too complicated and things have to simplify. And I don't know what that looks like. The back
end was still pretty simple though.
I know. I mean, that's kind of
today. Like, that was one of the more simple coverages, or I mean, back end coverages that they've run all year.
Yeah. Any parting thoughts on this game on Sunday?
I'd like to show the grades
Then
get to comments.
Okay, let's talk offensive line. Because Jake, okay, just for anyone who's not fully aware, and I know the true sickos know this, and they're all subscribed to the Hutch Report on Substack, hutchreport.substack.com. But Jake, instead of you having to look at PFF and their just god-awful AI slop algorithm, which is the only explanation.
Michael Williams is a better pass rusher than a run defender, and I can't with them. The point is,
can't do it.
We couldn't do it. It's objectively like not close.
Right. And so Jake goes through and grades these. He has a very strong rubric. He understands the plays that are called. These are the grades that he,
not all of them, but
I mean, true. Yeah. Yeah. And then these are the, let me add you up to the screen here, buddy. So here are the grades from the offensive line in week one. And you weren't kidding that, you know, our man Trent had a nice game. Like
Trent had a really nice game. Again, he's snatch trapping guys into the ground. Great job. McKivitz also did really good. He was kind of iffy in the run game, but pass game was really solid. Booney was just bad. Just bad in both facets of the game.
Yeah.
Brendel was incredibly underwhelming. He got worked a couple of times, had that one bad hold. And then Colby, like, was terrible in the pass game. He made up for it with some really nice reps, some really good help that, like, actually saved some things, like, saved some pressures. But, like, he was getting cooked. I had him allowing 10 pressures in this game. And so you would think the grade would be lower, but, like, he was really good in the run game, and so that evens it out. And as much as, like, I gut feel on the pressures it should be lower, I have my grading system, and I'm sticking to it. I'll give you all the context. And again, when you subscribe and you pay for these grades, like, I've got more stuff. I've got pass. I've got double team rates.
Right.
I've got ISO rates. I've got win losses, how many reps they actually win and lose, and then I show you each snap. So I've got a lot of good stuff.
Now, my thought coming out of the game was that Brendel ended up having to clean up a lot for Colby. You made the argument that McKivitz was, in fact, doing even more of that for Pooney. But what did you see from Brendel in this game? Because he grades out fine, which I think, as noted in the comments section, apologies, it should be, I should have had it. I forget who said it, but
Brendel being underwhelming is an upgrade for him. Yeah.
Kinda. What do you make?
Yeah, he's been fine this year. It's something where most of his job in the pass game is to provide help. There are very few one-on-one reps, so there's the upside for him in the pass game is low. There's more chance for him to have a screw up and be dinged just by the nature of what he's doing, because most of his reps will grade out as neutral because it's like help, and it's, you know, it's hard to have a good grade when you're helping unless it's like good help. In the run game, he's getting out and he's doing stuff, so there's more opportunity for him to grade out well. But yeah, he's helping out with a lot of stuff. He did have to clean up some stuff, but his help was kind of underwhelming at times, and he didn't get his head around fast enough, and so that's why he got dinged on a few things. But he's been not the problem for the most part. He had one terrible rep early that he got worked on, and a couple later in the second half, but for the most part, he's fine.
Let's take a look at the D-line here. These are your D-line grades from this past week. And again, it would be important for you to be on the screen. Nick Bosa, 14 snaps, 12. I mean, he finished in third place on 14 snaps. That's not bad.
He was working them. And in that play that he went down on, it seemed like a hold. That was just so unfortunate.
It was a hold or illegal hands to the face.
Yeah, and he was cooking him. He was cooking him over there. And then what you obviously the thing that stands out is Bryce Huff. Dude was absolutely working them. He was like the only real consistent pass rushing effort. He had, in my book, 7 pressures. And in terms of like pass rushing, how I graded out, he had 10 wins and 1 loss in terms of his reps. So that was impressive. Mikel, he was okay in the pass game. He wasn't great. I did have him with, you know, 5 pressures, but he had a couple of losses too. He was good. He was good. And then Sam O, much better. Much better from him.
And that's an important sign, like, because Sam O was pretty, it was a pretty tough
bad
watch
last week.
In week 2. And then, you know, it should be noted that Arizona's offensive line was down Hernandez and Paris. We'll never get his last name.
Yeah, the left tackle really struggled in that. Paris Johnson.
Beecham
was really iffy, and they went to some like jumbo packages.
Well, they're always in like, sort of a jumbo package.
They even had extra jumbo where they had
6 offensive linemen.
7 offensive linemen, and then one time they had a tackle as a fullback. Pretty cool.
That's saucy. And it still didn't work. Sean Z, another great comment. Mikel leading the team in snaps. I mean, you sent me tweet from 95.7 The Game where Brian Baldinger, who we do have a lot of respect for, said, like, I think Mikel needs more snaps. And it's like, I don't know how much more you can ask from this young man.
He's getting them, and he's got the wrist injury, which I'm sure we'll find out at the end of the season. He is like a torn ligament in his wrist, and he's like, oh, yeah, I just play through that.
Yeah.
Because he has to.
It's tricky because it's a situation where you want to ask more of your first-round defensive end, but it's not like he's a defensive end. He's a strange player
a 3-6.
Yeah, I mean, they lined him up at 9 a couple times. In fact, I'll just show you here. This was, by the way, this is, you know, we talk about Robert Saleh having to be more creative moving forward, or perhaps being more simple. We'll find out which way he goes, but he's certainly been more creative so far this year. Here's something they ran after Nick Bosa was out, and let's just all
The three-man front.
Let's all take a moment to acknowledge what the hell is happening here. This is a three-man front on a 3rd and 7.
It's Mikel at nose, if I'm not mistaken.
That is 100% correct, Jake. That's Mikel Williams playing nose tackle and 2 defensive end at the 9 technique. So we have spent a tremendous amount of time on this show, because I'm a dork who needs external acknowledgement, talking about the 404 tight front. This is a 909 front. I have never seen this
front.
I don't know what the hell you call this thing. I've never seen it before in my entire life. By the way, it worked. And it's 3 safeties on the field. As you can see, there's Pinnick in the, I guess, C gap almost. I mean, it's technically the B. There's Jair Brown. There's Siegel. There's Fred, you know, in the B. I mean, Stout's on the field with 3
big,
safeties.
Big nickel with a nickel.
It's unbelievable. Big nickel, little nickel. It's a 10-cent formation, which is why they call it dime. And it is wild. It is wild, and it worked. And selfishly, I want to see more of this weird stuff.
And he's still doing like the 6-man front in the red zone. Granted, this was like a perfect game to do it.
You
kind of had to.
13,
but like
Salah's
getting weird with the fronts, and he's going to have to keep doing that.
I am. I sent this around to a couple of folks yesterday, and the replies were to a man. What the fuck? Which, you know, to be fair, I'm sure Kyler Murray was thinking that they had.
I'm not sure Kyler was thinking much.
That's fair. He does know when the next Call of Duty comes out, and I'm excited to not have to talk about Kyler.
I wish it wasn't so easy to take shots at him, but man, he doesn't make it easy.
I really personally dislike him. It's now a personal hate. Okay,
should we get some comments?
Should we ever? We have a ton of them ready to go.
Appreciate you, Kevin, for joining in the super chat.
Shouts, Kevin.
Is it too reactionary to say they might want to explore another long-term option at DE? Money, age, and injury history on Bosa gives me some pause. I think that's like, no, is the short answer, just because of the amount of money committed. I think you say you've got Bosa locked up long-term. You'll have him for next year. Mm-hmm. Right. And you
by the way, for the reference, I mean, this kind of does screw this injury screws Nick Bosa up here a little bit contractually, because he was going to have to negotiate his new contract this upcoming offseason. And now he's coming off of injury. I doubt that he has.
Yeah.
I mean, pardon the phrasing, much of a leg to stand on in those negotiations. So that will be a fascinating little subplot to keep
totally
an eye on.
And I think it was Nick Wagner, someone from ESPN reported that they get $7 million in cap relief, but I think that's for next year.
Oh, that's great. They can roll that shit over
because of an insurance policy that they have.
Yeah.
I think in an ideal world, a lot of people are mentioning Trey Hendrickson, right?
Sure.
The problem is twofold. One, the Niners don't really want to spend a lot of money, right? They don't want to spend more cash. Mm-hmm. This team hasn't proven that it's worth spending more on.
Might be a moment where they come to that conclusion, but that is a ways away. That would be right up against the trade deadline. And that would be like, I think 7-1, 8-1, I think would have to be the number.
Yeah, they would have to be very clearly at the top of the NFC West.
Which then, again, and fundamentally, if you are continuing to win and you're doing well and you're like, oh, we're a Super Bowl contender, then what's the incentive to bring in and take on? I mean, it's not risk, but what's the incentive to do that move?
Like, I think it's a thing of like the other factor is Cincy, after all those negotiations, do they want it? Do they say they want to keep him, or they just get exasperated, their season's in the toilet? But that if that is the case, and they are like, we're selling Trey Hendrickson, the Niners aren't going to be the top bidders.
Not even close.
I can't imagine them being the top bidders.
No.
So while in the short term you say, all right, let's just go get a clear, great edge who can rush the passer, would that make you better? Yes.
No question.
It would. It would help a lot. He's just so pricey. And if I'm the Niners, I'm saying I will give you a third for him at the trade deadline if we're in a position where it's worth it. And I don't know that you would offer more. I don't think that it would be responsible to offer more.
They won't. Let's not forget what you and I have been talking about for months now. The priority in the building is 2026. Doesn't matter if you're 3-0 this year. Anything that happened in 2025 is gravy or building blocks for the future. They are focused solely on 26. They're focused solely in a more specific manner on building up the foundation of this team for the next generation. And the last two drafts, they believe, are the start of that. This upcoming draft is even more important to that, because that's the difference between, are you a championship contender or are you just a good team? So they're not going to sell a top 100 pick, which unquestionably it would cost, if not multiple, to get a guy like Trey Hendrickson. Because again, the market come trade deadline time, everybody at the baseball trade deadline is like, hey, you know what we could use? Some relievers.
Yes.
You know what? Everyone,
give me a lefty reliever.
And everybody at the NFL trade deadline, and I know it's not as active as baseball's, but like everyone is like, you know what we could use? Another pass rusher.
It's like, always wide receivers and pass rushers.
And legitimately, the pass rushers are the easier ones to bring in because it takes like 40 minutes to install the defense. Like, hey, do you know how to get the quarterback? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So like once a game, we'll ask you to just like step backwards or stunt. You got that? Cool. Let's go out there and play.
There's a
Everyone's going to be looking for him. The price is going to be exorbitant.
I agree. I think as much as that's like the natural reaction, and I'm not shitting on fans for going there, because
he's the only player who is theoretically available who can replace Nick Bosa to some semblance.
It's very logical. A thought I had is that this Niners season could go similar to the way the Vikings went 2 years ago, where they won all those like one score games and were like 14-3, but you're like, this team's fraudulent, right? And they were fraudulent. Yeah. I think there's an avenue where the Niners eke out some of these like close score games and you're like, but should they have won any of these? What is this team? They don't have Nick Bosa. And then they go into the playoffs and they just don't really have it because they don't have the depth.
I made the comparison to last year's Lions, and that would of course require this offense to take it like five more levels, which I think they're capable of doing. And it shows up in the big games. I mean, think about just the first two games of this year. And how they closed. They closed because they had great pass rushers who made game-winning plays. Bosa could have had the sack just as much as Huff against the Saints. Bosa did have the sack against the Seahawks. You pay the big money to big-time defensive ends because they can close games. That's what the money's for. And they don't have that in the pass rush right now. And I think Huff is great, but not having Nick Bosa on the other side, now getting more attention, we'll see how that manifests. But it is going to be a fascinating watch for the next couple of weeks, particularly the next week. Next week, you get two games against competition that, all things equal, you would think they'd steamroll, because the Jags do have to come across the country. I think that's an underrated factor in the game as well. And they're a hot mess because it's just Jacksonville. And then you get the Rams on Thursday night, with all of the understanding that those two teams have with each other at the same time. I mean, the Rams defense has performed, save for the second half against the Eagles. And the Rams offense, I mean, Davante Adams, if it's man, the ball's going to Devontae. If it's zone, it's going to Puka. And that is not a bad formula. it's working wonderfully. And Kyron Williams has an extra step, and Blake Corum looks like a very viable backup. And their offensive line is holding it together, and Matt Stafford's vertebrae haven't slipped yet. So it's like,
yes.
Not an ideal time to play the Rams. That could change by Thursday, but ultimately, like, that is a hell of a
football team. They're looking good. They'll be favored.
They'll be favored. If you had to guess right now, what would the Rams be favored by on Thursday Night Football?
2.5.
That was my number. God damn it. okay, what else we got?
Well, a couple other guys people threw out. Benali throws out Will McDonald, and then Symmetry Allowed throws out the guy on the Giants. I assume he's talking about Brian Burns.
What about Thibodeau?
Thibodeau is theoretically an option because they have Burns and they have Thibodeau, and then they have, you know, and they have Carter. So they would get rid of one, and I guess they haven't paid Thibodeau, so that would make sense. They paid Burns, and Burns is better. Yeah, Thibodeau's just like a guy that feels like I loved him coming out of the draft, but he's never quite been right. And his pressure rates were really terrible last 2 years. I haven't followed him closely enough, but my gut is like that's like a Chase Young type of player. So maybe that does make sense, right? A Chase Young type of player where there's like some huge flash, but like the substance isn't there.
Yeah.
But I think they learned their lesson there. And what do you think on like Will McDonald?
Listen, he's a Jet. Therefore, you know, Robert Saleh is going to be interested in him.
Why would the Jets trade him?
I don't think the Jets would trade him. I don't think they have any incentive to do so. Michael Clemens is a name that Larry brought up last night. That's a more viable
pass rusher, though.
Well, he's a body, and I think that's what you need to be thinking about. Like, if you're not getting Trey Hendrickson, get another body.
No.
Jalen Phillips from the Dolphins.
If his body is... Listen, Jalen Phillips is, like, sneaky, one of the best pass rushers in the league when healthy, but he came out of college with, like, a ton of injuries, concussion issues, has tore his ACL a couple times.
Yeah,
maybe you get that. Maybe he's like on sale for cheap when the Dolphins go into the trade deadline. They fire McDaniel and all that.
You could probably beat the
actually.
Topic.
That's an intriguing name. That's an intriguing name. I don't think it'll necessarily make sense, but like that's kind of like injury prone guy who's like got it when he's got it.
But you know what's actually going to happen, right? I mean, they're gonna trade for Arden Key for a 7th round pick and then take Clee Farrell off the practice squad, right? Like that's exactly what's gonna happen.
That sounds right. Didn't Farrell just get hurt? I don't know.
I don't know how he could. And you know, you failed with one fail. You might as well try again.
A couple more things here. Rishi makes a good point. I mean, they took Nick Martin with the 3rd, so how valuable is that pick? It's not.
He's a good player, you guys.
He's never played, but.
No,
and granted, like that's like not even the best example of their terrible 3rd picks. Remember when Cam Latu got drafted, and he was the only tight end I had in red as do not draft, and the 49ers went, he's a 3rd rounder. He doesn't do anything well, but sure.
Then the end of his first training camp, they said you need to go away.
How did they draft George Kittle? No team has evaluated tight ends worse than the San Francisco and 49ers outside of George Kittle. They're terrible at it. There's so many fun tight ends in the league, and they can't find one. What are they doing? Sorry. I mean, got me riled up.
The Cardinals and the Ravens are out here and they can play 3 tight ends at one time and all of them are competent and good and multifaceted. And meanwhile, the 49ers are like, well, if George Kittle goes out, we're fucked, huh?
Right. Rishi also says, obviously, as we were saying, they had a path to Super Bowl advantage once Bosa got hurt. I think the path to the Super Bowl, which I mentioned in the column, was like a very rose-tinted one. It was going to be very unlikely anyway. Needed everything to click and everyone to get healthy at the right time.
Right.
I mean, there is still a way where like this offense gets healthy in the second half and is a menace. Is like the number one offense in the league. Like you get Ayuk back healthy, and then like Bourne and Robinson. And Juwan Jennings is like your 3rd options, and Kittle
mix
back
and match. Yeah, you could do a lot of fun stuff.
If McCaffrey's healthy, like that's a fucking nightmare to try and deal with.
Yeah. So and now you're in dime and nickel all the time, and now that run game looks a lot more.
Mustafa's back. Like, there's a way they could be really damn good. It's just, it's still counting so much on rookies, and the secondary worries me, and I don't know that they have enough pass rush in the bag. To buy enough time without
Bosa. You're also operating on the butterfly effect of like, oh, once Bosa went out, like it didn't matter. Like if Bosa stayed healthy and they go and they get their teeth kicked in by the Rams on Thursday Night Football, then are we still talking Super Bowl or was it because Bosa's injured? Like,
right.
Everyone gets injured. I know that the Niners seem to have it worse than everybody else, but it is professional murder ball. Like guys are going to go down. And the trick is to insulate yourself better so that the drop off from your great players to your second rate players isn't terribly significant. And the 49ers said, to hell with that idea. Correct. We're doing it our own way. We're going to replace them with scrubs. We're going to replace them with the dirtiest of the dirt. And we'll still win anyway.
I got to shout out this comment from Nevin. Our second best tight end pick of the Shannon Lynch era was Charlie Warner, who we didn't pay and are now paying Farrell to be worse for the same price, basically.
He's not incorrect, though, I think.
No, he's not incorrect. That was Jordan Charlie Warner, Reed. But like Warner's not great.
Who was it? Reed, the big tight end?
Jordan Reed, who they signed, and they tried to get him and Kittle on the field at the same time in 2020, and they could never be on the field at the same time.
No, get this. He was available because he was constantly injured, and then he was constantly injured.
Rohan asked a good question, like, do we think the 2026 plan is smart, or should we strike now?
I think it's smart. Listen, it's a great way to advocate responsibility for 2025.
Yeah.
And when you come in with as many rookies as they did and as many unproven players as they did, I would want to be as removed from the results of 2025 as possible. Just because it's working out so far and probably will continue to work out doesn't mean that it wasn't a sane plan. The Super Bowl window closed and they looked at their situation and they said, okay, we can either try to scrounge together one more year of contention off of the rubble that we have here.
Yeah.
Or we can clean this shit up for a year and then start to build something else again. And in the NFC, it's not that hard to put something up. It is hard to make that decision to clean it up. And listen, it was made a lot easier by the fact that everything had completely gone to hell. It was total rubble. So,
yeah.
It's a good question, Sean. It's Trent Williams. Trent has promised them that he's going to play out his contract. And
they will never address it.
Nope. It's like my dog dying if I never address the possibility. Like Moose is going to outlive me. And if I never have to acknowledge the fact that he is a dog and will die in the next 7 to 8 years, then I don't have to work through those emotional issues. It's very good.
That's how I'm sure approaching it, too.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like the meme where that guy's at a party and he's standing in the corner and he's like, and it's basically John Lynch, and John Lynch is like, they don't know that I don't have a plan to replace Trent Williams. And everyone's like, we all know that you have no plan to replace Trent Williams.
But the flip side is everyone says, oh, they need a plan to replace Trent Williams. Like, what a ridiculous sentence.
They'll get a plan when Trent retires.
It's just hilarious. Like, we need a plan to replace Trent Williams. Like, what kind of assholes is everybody thinking that you can replace Trent Williams?
You can't.
Like, oh, we have an heir apparent to Trent Williams. We found another football god, and he's just going to sit for a year? Like, the fuck?
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. Like, Staley, they'll be like, Trent, when you're making the decision, tell us early enough, and we'll figure something out. And they'll do their best. Same thing, or something similar where they trade for like a replacement level tackle who's at least played football.
Right.
And then they probably draft somebody and that doesn't go well.
I mean, it might require them to stretch a little bit on their interpretation of what a first round pick should be. Maybe take somebody who they had a second round grade on late in the first.
But I don't want to picture this offense without
I mean, it's fundamental. He's fundamental to it. But it is like, dude, like, there's just no football gods. I mean, Joe Staley retires. He tells them with enough time so that they're able to get Trent Williams, who had sat out the entire year prior because of a medical disagreement with the Washington football team. He thought that they were trying to kill him. He sat out the year, so they traded him for a third and a fifth. Like, how's that scenario going to come up again?
Yeah, there's nothing replicable about
that. Have this future
that.
Hall of Famer who won't play for us anymore for a third and a fifth.
Also, how about Joe Staley being awesome for like a decade and then Trent Williams just like kind of overshadowing everything he ever did? Because he's just, and Joe Staley's like, God damn it. Like, I was so good, but this guy is on another level. And Joe Staley's like a borderline Hall of Fame caliber player.
Outstanding player. I actually find it rather upsetting. I'm not a big retired numbers guy. Yeah. I don't think that anybody's number should really be retired. Like, if you want to wear Joe Montana's number, go to town, because you're just going to get compared to Joe Montana all the time. But if you do retire numbers the way that the Niners retire numbers, kind of ridiculous to see someone out there in a 53 or a 74, no?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's just that they have retired so many numbers, right?
No one's out there in 52. I've noticed that one, and he's a Hall of Famer, so no question. Maybe that's the threshold. Like, Mizzou doesn't retire numbers unless you're a first-team All-American or win the Heisman.
Have you seen the Michael Irvin take?
It's a great take. His incredible take. I love seeing it.
Michael Irvin is... you all know who Michael Irvin is, but his take is like, I don't want my number retired.
Yeah.
He's like, because whenever CD Lamb goes out there and he drops a ball, they go, Mike Irvin wouldn't have dropped that ball. And then when he goes out there and he looks amazing, they go, looks just like Mike Irvin.
Genius. I mean, legitimately the best take on retired numbers I've ever heard. But it is, the Niners are like, well, let's, you know, retire some dude from the 40s number. And that's cool. I'm sure that player deserved it in the 60s when they made that decision. But like, to see Navarro Bowman and Joe Staley playing every week, or in the case of this year's Niners team, you know, one of them playing every week, still feels wrong. Maybe, you know, don't officially retire it, but maybe keep it out of the rotation for a while.
Banali, ever think about how the 49ers could have drafted Tristan Wirfs?
What about Creed Humphrey?
Yeah, their argument is that they got Ayuk with the pick they traded down for, because they had to trade up to get Ayuk. So that's intertwined forever.
They say this shit.
Well, I mean, it's
such
a fact.
It's such reverse engineering. It's always a good idea to trade Jordan Mason because we knew Marquise Siegel would be there in the fifth round.
I know. And they always do those trades where you're like, see, it's not a one-to-one. You can never fully criticize us because it's like in the Merck and Meyer. Tribe is wrong. Trent does look worse.
Worse.
And he definitely looks worse, which is to say Trent
very good.
looking worse is miles beyond 95% of the league. Like, he's like, this is, and he got beat a couple times in this game and he's still like demolishing people. Like, and again, I think he's phoning it in a little bit where he's just throwing guys.
Yep.
And it works. Like, he's snatch trapping guys into the ground where I'm like, Am I over crediting Trent? It's tough to grade him because you're like, on the Trent scale, this isn't that impressive.
Awful.
Human scale, this is one of the greatest plays I've ever seen, and he's doing it consistently.
if you saw that guy on another team and his name was Williams Trent, you'd be like, pretty good offensive lineman. I think that he's a damn good left tackle. This guy sucks compared to what he was.
The first game was bad and it was still good. Like, I know he allowed a lot of I mean it. Like,
okay,
it was more good than bad. The problem is with O-line, and I've tried to figure out a way to calculate it. I just have to stick to my scale. But, like, O-line is based on what you fuck up with. Like,
right.
And Trent had a lot of pressures allowed. Most I've ever seen from him.
It was registered at 10 by some public.
I had him at 8 for that game. I had Colby at 10 in this game. And maybe I should ding that more. It's just tough to like find a consistent way to grade that, but like, he still looks incredible and he's throwing people to the ground and like him and Colby working together, Colby's getting second level and ceiling and driving people in a way that no other person on this line can do besides Trent. And that is, I think, going to lead to some real explosive plays coming up here.
Well, that's why you say they need to run it on the left side. And I think legitimately their problem is that Farrell, every time he's been on the left side blocking, has just looked awful. I cannot explain it.
And Ricky's like, meh, and Kendrick Bourne's okay. I'm interested
to see what Robinson does as a blocker, because he's certainly big enough to be a good one.
He's just back this week that we haven't even really talked about.
He's present. We'll talk about him on Thursday. We have anything else we got to hit here? Sorry, I know that the comments
I'm not sure. We got a lot of great questions. I think that's about it. Any Jag stuff we'll cover on Thursday. I think that's it. Go subscribe to the Hutch Report. I will have my tape takeaways written up today. That'll be with clips and with 10 or so takeaways from the game. And then tomorrow I will have grades. And Dieter has seen some of the charts. And my God, again, they look like this. Good stuff, folks. Good stuff. Anyway, we're so good at navigating that stuff. Anyway, go subscribe. Love you guys. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
Bye.